In today's show, we enjoy the fact that Todd's not here. We talk about feature pack one quite a bit, and then we go to random stuff and make sure that you know to use the right passwords to avoid getting hacked, right? Always a lot of fun. Always a good time when there's no Todd. So anyway, let's get started. Good afternoon and welcome to Todd Clint SharePoint Podcast number 314, recorded live Monday, November 14th, 2016, from my basement in Cincinnati, Ohio. I am your host, the lovable and adorable, kissable, all of those funables things, Shane Young. And guess what? I am super excited to report that Todd is not here. And in an effort to make America great again, he got deported to a tropical paradise. Apparently, he's currently laying on the beach on his phone in the Slack room, quite frankly, because he's a bad person. He's not watching the show, so he doesn't know what we're saying, and he doesn't watch them, so he'll never know. But he is in Slack. He should be taking a vacation. So anyway, you know, we've made America great again. We've gotten Todd out of the country. Speaking of making America great, it's time to pay the bills. And to pay the bills, we've got to thank our friends at Rackspace, right? SharePoint.rackspace.com for all of your SharePoint hosting needs, and then www.rackspace.com/Microsoft for all your Microsoft technology needs. So SharePoint, Azure, private clouds, public clouds, any of that fun stuff, they're happy to help you. On the other hand, if hosting is not what you want, but you want to do some of that consulting stuff, then guess what? Me and the good old Bold Zebras, those guys right there, be happy to help you. www.boldzebras.com. And don't forget about my 5-day training class coming up the week of December 5th. If you use the code TODSTINKS, you get 17% off. How much fun is that? You get to type something you've always wanted to say in public and you can blame it on the money. You'd be like, I did it for the Benjamins. Yeah, you probably won't, but you know, I'm trying to help you. Anyway, rolling right along, looking at our production notes, it looks like number 313 didn't make it out before Todd got deported. I don't know. And I, you know, I keep saying he got deported. He keeps telling me that he promised if Trump won, he was going to go to a tropical island. So I don't know who to believe at this point. But either way, he didn't get it out. We did have audio issues with 313, and I don't know if that was part of the problem or not. It looked like Google Hangouts was just freaking out and added a bunch of static to my voice, which is sad because, you know, I bring the good to the show, and Todd, well, Todd just brings his name to the show, I guess. But it was very disappointing. So hopefully when 313 comes out, Todd's worked out some of those sound issues for you. And when 314, this show, comes out, it'll probably be December. So all the news and notes I'm giving you will be old news notes. But, yeah, they're still valuable. And you get to spend time with me. So good times. So speaking of that, let's just jump right into the topics. And it looks like really today's show, we're going to kind of focus on feature pack one. It shipped last week, right, on November 8th, 2016. And with feature pack one, you know, we've kind of previewed what was coming in there. There wasn't any surprises other than it just showed up on a Tuesday. We're like, woohoo, feature pack one, let's get it installed. And so, you know, with that, right, we just kind of run through some of those features again. We do get the additional administrator logging. So the different things admins do throughout the interface, those are being logged better than they were before post November updates. And you know, that's just an upside for those of you that share administration duties. I've always had the good fortune of being the only administrator, so if something was broke, it was my fault. But, you know, for those of you that don't have that burden of being able to always blame yourself, you've got other people to blame, and now you got logs to prove they screwed it up. And, you know, I alluded to it, and it's worth noting that while we keep calling it Feature Pack 1, it is also, by Microsoft standards, just called November Public Update. So if you go and look out on like the SharePoint update site, it's just called the November 2016 public update for SharePoint Server 2016. So you will see that name. You'll see some people call the November cumulative update. They're all the same thing. And while this did ship for the November, also we did get the same updates for SharePoint 2013. So remember, if you are a SharePoint 2013 person, you have those updates as well. Other key features. Staying on the auditing trail, the hybrid auditing. So if you're running a hybrid environment, maybe you're doing your OneDrive for business stuff out in the cloud, or you're doing hybrid search or something like that. Now you can ship all your on-prem logs out to your Office 365 or SharePoint Online tenant and get access to those out there. So you kind of have a consolidated view of your logs. Might keep you going in the right direction. My favorite update from Feature Pack 1 is the MinRoll enhancements. So remember, it used to be you needed 4 SharePoint servers to use MinRoll, right? You'd have a web server, a distributed cache, a search server, an application server, plus SQL and all the other stuff. And so then to do true high availability, you needed 8. Well, with this new MinRoll feature, you can now do a smaller farm. You can run web front end and distributed cache roll on one server, an application with search on the other server, so 2 SharePoint servers to get a MinRoll farm up and running, and then you'd have to have 4 servers if you want to make that high availability. One of the biggest reasons to really consider high availability, if you're like, whatever, I don't need it, you know, you definitely get performance enhancements from getting more servers in your farm, but you're probably like, I've got 50 users, who cares? But one of the other features of it is you are able to do 0 downtime patching. As long as you have that full maxed out farm, right? So whether it's the 8 servers pre-service pack 1 or feature pack 1, FP1, or the 4 servers, right, the 2 and 2, now that we've got feature pack 1, with those available, you can do 0 downtime patching. So you guys can avoid, you can have 0 downtime. Woohoo! And that will be a lot of fun, right? Keep you out of trouble. And who doesn't like new fun features that keep us out of trouble? So something to consider along the way. Other things that we get, the OneDrive Modern Experience. I haven't played with it yet to really see what the new OneDrive for Business Modern Experience is inside of SharePoint. But what I do know, and you guys need to make note of, is that by default, when you install Feature Pack 1, you get the new OneDrive Modern Experience. And if you are not a software assurance customer or have some other type of repeating license with Microsoft, software assurance really being the answer to that, you have to go and turn off the OneDrive Modern Experience. So it's a self-policing. It gets turned on by default, and you're in license violation until you manually go and turn it off. The good news is to turn it off, it's just a little bit of PowerShell. You go in, you get the farm. There's a farm property called OneDrive User Experience, I believe. And you just change that from version 2 to version 1. And then now you're back in license compliant, and you're not using any of the new features. But it is something that you manually have to think about and take advantage of. So, or not take advantage of, but go and implement. So if you do deploy Feature Pack 1, consider your licensing ramifications. Other things in there, custom tiles. So we've got, if you've been in Office 365 at all, you know over there on the left side of the page, right? I'm like, which way? I'm backwards. I got all confused. I need to do the L and the R. Or L and the R. The L and the backwards L. I don't know which one. I can't even tell my left from my right. It's a bad day. But anyway, over there on the left, you've got those custom tiles, or you've got the tile thing that drops down, kind of gives you different places to jump off and do. So now with the feature pack, you can now add your own custom tiles and point off to your own internal resources, your own sites, and things like that. So it gives you a little more flexibility with those. I think that's a pretty good thing. Seems like a pretty easy feature to add, too, so I don't know why it took them so long, but either way, we got it. They added a OneDrive API, and then the hybrid taxonomy service is now in preview. So if you're using the managed metadata service application on-prem, you're like, hey, I wish I could use that up in the cloud. That's now in preview, so you can try it out. So I guess what they're trying to say is it's, you know, hasn't been tested enough to say go and do it because you're going to have bugs, or you may have bugs, but it is at least good enough for you to start poking around and seeing if that's going to be good enough for you. Apparently, there are some customers that love managed metadata so much, they weren't going to go to any type of hybrid scenario or go to the cloud until they could use it. So what do I know? So anyway, that's the overview of the different features that are in there. And so here I've got you a link for exploring the new hybrid scenarios. So there was actually a pretty good session at Ignite that kind of went through all of those. And so that session's got a blog post, some links, and a YouTube video that Microsoft released here recently, because now all this functionality that they talked about in the session is now available to everyone. So worth checking out if you're like, hey, all right, I can now do Feature Pack 1. I probably should learn what it actually means. So that was a pretty good one. I'd also remind you that a lot of these features showed up in SharePoint 2013. So most of these features we've been talking about, they're in SharePoint 2013 post-September CU for SharePoint. September 2016 CU for SharePoint 2013. Oh, so many dates. So that's just a nice thing for you to kind of keep in mind. You have those options all available to you to go learn more and to also roll it in your 2013 farms. Also, because I am the greatest person on the planet Earth, Todd told me that. He told me to make sure that I got worked in the show. You know, he wanted it to be Lori, but, you know, since we decided that my dog, who is 70 pounds at 7 months old, is probably going to be bigger than Lori, she's no longer the greatest person on Earth. It's now me. Anyway, I made a video that walks you through installing Feature Pack 1 right on my Lovely YouTube channel. So www.youtube.com/ShaneYoungCloud, all one string put together there. And so in the video, I show you how to install Feature Pack 1, and I show you how to disable the stuff with the OneDrive, and I show you kind of how to learn what version your farm is and all that stuff. Things you're all probably pretty used to, but as people often quote and tell me, you know, on Twitter and stuff, right, it's just nice to see someone else walk through it so you can be like, yeah, that actually works. So there you go. I walk you through it so you know it actually works. Other Microsoft updates for the week around SharePoint, right? This is a SharePoint heavy show. Woohoo! Usually when Todd's here, we get off track so much. We don't talk about SharePoint enough. So this week I thought we would. But so one of the things is the SharePoint antivirus exclusion list was updated. And so what that is, if you're not familiar with it, it's the list of folders that you need to exclude from your server's antivirus on where SharePoint's installed. So like, you know, don't scan the web extensions 16 folder. So it walks through all of those different folders you need to exclude to avoid any error messages with SharePoint and kind of keep you out of trouble. And they just recently made some updates to it. They found some new places they needed to get done. And that article is actually covers SharePoint 2007, 2010, 2013, and 2016. Oh my goodness. It's so hard to believe, right? We still have, you know, I was at a conference here in Cincinnati recently, right? There's still people with SharePoint 2003 out there. It just boggles my mind. You know, I talking about even 2007, I'm like, yeah, I think we had shared service providers then. And so it's a little weird. Especially also because we, you know, the transition from 10 to 13 to 16, it's very tight, right? For the most part, they're all three just kind of iterations of the same, but you know, the jump from 3 to 7 was a night and day, 7 to 10 was a night and day, but then 10 to 13 was just a little bit of a change, and 13 to 16 is about that much, right? Like my admin class, I'm literally teaching it for 13 and 16 at the same time because like the delta is just so tiny. There's no reason not to just double the audience available because there's the same product, different numbers. So anyway, so yeah, that was updated. Microsoft also today started rolling out the Outlook Customer Manager. So it's a lightweight customer resource management tool that bolts right into Outlook. And so if you are on Office 365 and you are the business premium first release customers, I don't even know what the heck that is, but if you're one of those people, it started showing up for you today. And so the idea around this particular tool is it's going to allow you to kind of better manage all your correspondence. You can tag tasks for customers, meetings with customers. So you get that lightweight CRM experience a lot of small businesses can really take advantage of without any additional cost or having to buy any of those features. And apparently, you know, it's going to get also a little like blade over on the side. It's going to kind of show you the roll up. Here's all the interactions with this customer and all that fun stuff. And then you can also share that information with other people in your company. So I think it's a pretty good enabler. You know, I know that CRMs are one of those things that small businesses we've always enjoyed. We're like, man, that really makes sense. But we don't have time to go and do Salesforce, right? Salesforce is hard. Salesforce is a terrible product too, but that's a story for another day. But those type of applications just take such a commitment to get the data in, to get someone to writing reports, to getting someone to massaging it, to adding the fields, to adding the workflows. They're really hard. So, you know, I haven't tried the Microsoft CRM today because apparently I'm not a business premium first release customer. Still don't know what that means. But if they can truly make it so it just kind of slides right into my Outlook experience without an extra client, without any add-ins, I think that could be a really big win for Microsoft. And another one of those reasons that, you know, we keep talking about, they keep finding ways to tug people off of on-prem and into the cloud. And that's going to be another one that helps. All right. So that gets us through the updates. I think the next thing I want to talk about is that Power BI is a pain in my butt. I've been helping a customer this last week do some Power BI stuff and kind of exploring what can it do, what can it not do. And it's just such a tough story. So if you haven't done a lot with Power BI, you know, so it's a desktop client, right? We start with a desktop client. And so I build out my report. I'm like, all right, great. I should be able just to push this to SharePoint Online. Nope. Even though it's kind of in that story, it's not part of the whole SharePoint Online experience. So you push it to your Power BI dashboard. And so then out there, I'm like, okay, now it's my Power BI dashboard. I should be able to just take it and suck it down, you know, over to my SharePoint. Nope. Turns out they haven't put out web parts to that yet. Apparently they're coming, but this weird disjointed story, because I started with SharePoint list data, right? So I took SharePoint list data, sucked it down to an on-prem, you know, on my computer client. And then once I got it on my client, I then pushed it up to a different site. And then out there on my dashboard on the Power BI site, then I got to publish it. And if I publish it so the whole world can see it, then I can go, you know, use like a page viewer web part or something to show it over here in SharePoint. It's like this big circle of life that doesn't really make sense. So I don't know. I mean, maybe some of you are better at Power BI. I mean, I'm certain some of you are better at Power BI. But I've just found that it's like all the BI stories, right? We just never know. Am I supposed to use Power BI? Am I supposed to use Excel Web Services? Am I supposed to use Performance Point, Power Pivot? I still don't know. So I don't know. That's the type of stuff I usually hit my good friend Laura Rogers up for, right? When I have questions, I'm like, Laura, please put these in baby steps for me so I understand how to use it. And it's just hard. It's not hard. Power BI is real easy to use. Really love the tool. Just hard to get the whole story yet. So hopefully Microsoft continues to build towards it. Next up, I tried to go wait in line on Friday for the Nintendo Classic. That was right. They were launched. My local Target had a whole six of them. I was about 25 in line for that, so no Nintendo for this guy yet either. But I'm really looking forward to playing it. If you've played it, you know, if you've got one, definitely tweet me. Tell me, is it good? Is it bad? You know, is it worth the hubba bubba? I can also tell you that I had several of my nerdier friends, which reminds me I need better friends, but who really kind of got hung up on the idea of like, why would you buy that thing? You can just buy a Raspberry Pi and you install an NES emulator and do it all yourself. And like, I don't want that. I wanted, you know, here's my $60. I get a box, I plug it in my TV, I got a controller, I'm playing. Not this thing that kind of does all the same stuff, but I got to build it myself and do. So I don't know, maybe I'm getting old, maybe I'm just losing my nerd card, but the idea of building my own emulator for half the price was not worth it to me. Oh, let's see, how are we doing on time? Looks like we're doing pretty good. All right, a couple more things and I'll give you some random news because we got a few minutes. But I got a nice fun article here. The Philips Hue smart bulb was hacked from a drone. So this in itself is probably not super interesting to you, right? But you know, you've seen the smart light bulbs that you can control, right? Big Bang Theory did the episode where the guys in China were changing the nerds in America's light bulbs and stuff, right? It was a whole open thing, and it was a good episode, right? Big Bang Theory is always a good show. But I think it just serves as a great reminder to all of us, right? The Internet of Things is susceptible to hacking. Hopefully we figure that out now, right? We've got light bulbs being hacked. And then we've got, you know, all those DVRs being used to do the DNS flood of service that stopped Twitter from working and all the other websites from working two weeks ago. So the Internet of Things is kind of a little scary, you know? And when you're like, well, you know, who cares if you can change my light bulb or not? You hacked my light bulb. Who cares, right? But that light bulb is on your network. So what are they doing? They jump in, they grab the light bulb, they go from the light bulb, they spread the disease or the virus to the other smart devices in your house that are unprotected, and then they can start waging war on your router and your computers and things like that, right? So it's just making your home that much more vulnerable because you've got new ways, new ingress ways for people to get in there and, you know, attack your stuff. So makes me a little nervous when it comes to all that. And, you know, speaking of being hacked, I'm sure most of you have seen this, but hopefully none of you saw it and we got real nervous, but apparently a bunch of adult websites like Friend Finder and things like that, they all got hacked over the weekend or recently. It looked like they got about 412 million accounts by some estimates. That's crazy. 412 million accounts, right? We won't talk about all the people out there. I don't care. I'm not judging there. But what I wanted to do is use this as a reminder also, right? So just like we remind you that unsecure light bulbs is a way for them to get in and, you know, steal your banking data because they're on your same network. adult websites being hacked, you know, what happens is they take all of those usernames and passwords. And so they're going to go try those on other sites, right? They're going to take your username and password. They find out that they're going to try logging to Facebook with it, Twitter and that, you know, or your Amazon Prime account, because they're looking at that type of stuff. But they're also, one of the worst parts of that is they like to take the passwords, right? So they're just going to say, all right, give me the list of the 412 million passwords. And they add that to their password dictionaries. So now that your awesome password of Chewy is the biggest horse dog ever, which was never known, was never been typed anywhere in the world, was undiscovered, is now in a password database somewhere. So you're using that same password in all of these different places. Even if you're using different accounts, you've now put your password as one of the seeds to be attacked. So I don't know. It's just a reminder that if you're going to go and do anything on the internet, all as much as possible, you should be using a different password for every account. And really different, you know, usernames, right? It's pretty easy to set up aliases. Even your Hotmail account can have aliases. So, you know, you could have ShaneYoung1 at Hotmail.com on this site, and then ShaneYoung2 at Hotmail.com on this site. It doesn't sound like that big of a difference, but for automated attacks, there's no correlation between the two. So that's what you're after. You know, someone who's really diving in and trying to attack you, they're going to solve that problem pretty fast. But someone who's just downloading that stuff off the dark web, and then doing that, you know, it's not, their automated attacks aren't going to get the script kiddies aren't going to get your other account. So just protect your passwords and that type of stuff. Last topic here. We'll cover this one real quick. And so speaking of the script kiddies, you know, one of the things that you probably remember from that election cycle, which still hasn't ended because people keep jabbering on about it, including myself now, so I guess I'm part to blame. Anyway, one of the things they found out was that a lot of those fake news sites, right, you see them, we won't talk about what the different topics were, but they use different fake news websites. It turns out that those fake news websites were actually not being created by activists or people who cared about the right wing or the left wing or the middle wing. They were written by people who just wanted to make money. So all of those fake sensational news sites, you know, they've tracked, I think, 100 of them, you know, to one little town in Macedonia. And so those guys were just sitting there cranking out these websites, making up ridiculous news, and then putting the link on Facebook and Twitter and things like that. They were getting picked up by whatever group was that news was exciting to, and they were just driving ads. They found out that fake political news was a great way to drive ad traffic, which was making them money. So it was a great way for them to make money. They didn't care who won the election. They didn't give a darn about who read the content. They're like, as long as eyeballs are getting here, you know, Google's ad work or ad network or Facebook's ad network or whatever, right? They're all going to give these guys, you know, those little 1 cent, 2 cents a click that added up, you know, and $500 barely, you know, gets me whatever here, but, you know, $500 in some of these different countries, it's a lot of money. So they've been using those websites to make a lot of money. And so speaking of that fake news, also, I think today Zuckerberg was talking about, you know, Facebook is trying to remove all those fake news websites. And so this was actually a topic me and my wife had talked about over the weekend before we saw his article, because we were talking about, you know, was there a business for vetting those news sites? But anyway, what we were interested in was that it's going to be really hard to remove the fake news websites because, you know, short of they're going to use AI and, you know, reporting and things like that to do it. But, you know, it's hard to do that without censoring because what, you know, yes, if they said fake news, you know, Donald Trump is an alien. Okay, that's pretty clear. That's probably fake news. But if they do, you know, things that are a little more closer that, you know, they are open to interpretation, are they supposed to censor all that stuff now too? Right? I mean, most of the mainstream media is news that has a spin on it. So are those all fake news websites? So I think they're going to have a real hard time on drawing the line. Yes, it'll be easy to get the major outliers, but those ones that kind of, you know, just a little bit obnoxious, just a little bit of untruthfulness in them, are those all fake news websites now? I think that's going to be the question. And I don't know. I don't envy Facebook trying to solve that problem because anything they do is probably going to be considered censorship, right? And they're going to get all pushback, right? And it's not censorship when they're pushing the news that you don't like and saying that's a fake news site. But when they push the first site that you're like, wait a minute, I do believe that Shane is adorable and lovable, I don't think that's fake news, then you're going to get really offended. So what the backlash to them will be as they try and solve this problem, which I don't think is solvable, be interesting to see over the coming months. All right, I think that does it. I think I've rambled on long enough. You know, it's 5:25 here on the East Coast. It's time for me to go find some dinner because, well, I'm a hungry hippo. On the promotion front, just a couple things here. Remember that there is the Todd Clint birthday charity drive that Miss Gowan drives every year. And so she does that. You know, any donations that are made between December 12th and January 16th, you know, they want you to report those so they can figure out you know, how much it's doing it, and, you know, just a good way to, you know, give back a little to the show and feel good about it in the process. So if you want to be part of that, there's a link to the good old that in the notes here. And then is the last piece. The last piece is my own promotion. Duh. And the last piece, right, Lori pressed something and my OneNote just blanked out. So I'm like, what do I say? Definitely, if you're interested, sign up for my training class, boldzebras.com/training, and use the code ToddStinks to get 17% off. Also, remember to go hit the old YouTube channel, right? Because not because I really make any money off of that. That's another story for another day. But because there's a lot of good stuff out there. I have the Feature Pack 1 videos. My PowerShell for Beginners one's actually got over 1,000 views now. It turns out that PowerShell for Beginners is a popular topic. So anyway, I think that sums it up. So thanks for hanging out with me today, and I'll see you next week.